The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Today is my favorite American holiday from Martin Luther King. And unfortunately, I don't have an appropriate talk. Every year I wish to have an appropriate talk to mark this wonderful event, this wonderful person. Next week I'm going to start I should have started this week, but next week I'm going to start a series of talks on the Buddha's teaching and peace and nonviolence. So it would have been better to start today, I think, but it didn't occur to me. So it's scheduled to start next week. And because I have a series of talks, three talks I'm supposed to give, I would like today to have a day for just kind of discussion, some questions from you. I'd like to hear what kind of concerns you have about practice or something. And perhaps you have questions. And we'll see what kind of responses I might have.
So it's not a question per se, but it's a comment about my meditation today. The monkeys were incredibly jumpy today. They were all over the place. I think I haven't had a meditation like this before. I couldn't quiet them down with the things that I usually know of to try to focus. My mind would keep on bouncing, and I've had 3 days pretty calm. My family was away. I did what I wanted. There are no hang-ups, but I had so many things in my mind that I wanted to do in these 3 days, and maybe that's what loaded my mind, but even things like books that I've read years ago came to my mind for no apparent reason. So I just thought it was funny. I don't know if you have comments on that, but that's it.
I appreciate hearing that. It reminds me of a story about Mullah Nasruddin, this wonderful Sufi, wise fool or wise man. It seems that the Mullah Nasruddin was become the gardener of the king. And no matter what he could do, he couldn't get rid of the dandelion weeds in the garden. And so he went and talked to different gardeners, and they all had different advice, and he tried them all, but he just couldn't get rid of the dandelions, the weeds. So finally he went to a really old, really wise master gardener who had been gardening for a long, long time and said, "I have this problem with these weeds, these dandelion weeds, and I can't get rid of them. What should I do? What have you done?" So Mullah explained everything he'd done and all things he'd done. And he said, and so the wise old gardener said, "Oh, in that case, the only thing that's left is to love those weeds." And of course it's going to be that way sometimes. Yeah, you know, you're human, of course. And it's not so important, you know, that you have it or don't have it, a quiet mind, but what's important is how you relate to that. And if you relate to it as it shouldn't be there, or get angry or disappointed or discouraged, that's really the kind of the food for the practice, to look at that, to the reaction you have. Can you meet it with some equanimity? And if you meet it with equanimity, that gives you a really good vantage point from which to study it. And I know sometimes I've sat and meditated trying to focus on my breath, for example, and my mind is, you know, kind of monkey mind, as you say. And I'm kind of like looking for the trees rather than looking at the forest. And sometimes what's needed is just to back up and look at the whole thing and be aware of the whole disaster, you know, the whole show, and then it can open up in a different way, and perhaps it's something you have to kind of, probably very important to see by stepping back and kind of seeing, oh, here's a human being, here's a human mind, which is kind of wild, and if you look too closely for something, that you maybe in other meditations you're used to looking really closely, getting really still, you'll miss the forest.
What could you talk about? Boundaries? Establishing, healthy boundaries. And sometimes when you want to give a lot, you don't necessarily protect.
And how do you find yourself again and see where your boundaries are, even sometimes you don't know, just to establish a healthy relationship
Beautiful.
In general?
It's a great question, thank you. But I want to leave it, I want to question you back about it. It's a wonderful question, it's appropriate, everyone has to kind of work with that. But I find, I suspect that the word boundaries is used too easily. It's a very popular word in many circles. And I wonder if you can explain what you mean by that, without using the word.
Yes. I notice sometimes you want, for example, to give a lot to your family and your friends, and to the extent sometimes you forget yourself and what, you don't have a sense of boundaries. But then sometimes people will come to you and say, oh, this is, you need to establish these boundaries. You can, you know, these are...
So try again.
Okay, I will try. sometimes you give so much that you don't see, you know, what should be interpreted as right or wrong. And you don't see, you see the space and you just give. And you have to deal with others that think that you must establish some limitations between right and wrong, but you don't see it. And then the question is like, okay, what do I do with that? Do I need to establish, I don't see the limitation, and how do we come up with these limitations?
Great, okay, great. And so why do you, so when you're involved with other people, what happens to you that you stop seeing?
I just see giving. I don't see, like, they are focusing on their, like, personal interest or the well-being or things like that. And sometimes I don't sense what they see. And
so you're saying they focus on their self-interest and they don't understand yours, but you're also focusing on their interest.
Yes.
And you don't see your own.
Exactly.
So but why do you do that?
I don't know. because sometimes it's very easy. And often, you know, underlying, you always prioritize the interests that are involved.
Yes.
And sometimes, and it's just very easy technique, you don't really think about it. And sometimes some interests are more important than others, so it's easy to not set these limitations between the person, but as you go along, sometimes you realize by giving a little bit too much, then you kind of expand yourself and you see yourself giving more and more and more, and you realize at one point you say, oh, I cannot no longer do that. So yes. You kind of learn, but you don't see yourself going towards a direction to where you need to set up limitations.
Yes, and so you've had that experience, I guess, enough times that it's an issue for you here. Have you learned at all from going too far? Or you don't learn from your mistakes?
I do learn from my mistakes, but you sense what might be how you cannot go that far, but the limitation you reach may be not the same as other people, and some other people will say, "Oh, in that extent, in that situation, I will have done that," and you don't necessarily. You are not necessarily in harmony with their thinking, because you are, of course, you are different.
Uh-huh.
So your limitations, you know, how much you can give, it might not be the same as someone else.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
I think sometimes you just question it. Sometimes it's like, should I set boundaries? It's like the main question. Should I set limitations?
No, you can't. Don't. That's too easy.
Okay.
You used it a few times, but. Should you set what? Should you do what?
Pause and say, you know, if someone brings a subject and say, maybe you should have done that, and you pause and say, should I have done that? And then you reflect on it, and sometimes the answer doesn't come that easy.
Yeah, I know.
It might take months, you know.
But, I know.
Sometimes you also, what I realize, because you are involved with a lot of people, so you have to respond to their own desires, their own limitation, how we feel, you know, in with respect to the situation. Let's say we have a talk with all of us, and yes, some people will have different interests, and they, let's say we have a very difficult subject, and some of the things we will feel comfortable with and some not. So it's so hard to feel comfortable with everyone and put that in harmony, and knowing that we all have our own limitations, and the person's limitation might not be mine, but I still have to kind of interact with it.
Yes.
And sometimes it's not that easy.
Uh-huh. Great. And so a few things to say. Early on when you spoke, you said, great, it was great hearing it this way. To me, it was much richer and more meaningful than a question about boundaries, which was an important question, but it put much more kind of meat on it, or understanding of your situation better. So I feel like I could respond, or you know, understand, you know. So one thing is that you, early on you said that you're involved in your interactions with other people and you forget yourself. And so the key thing there was the forgetting yourself. It takes a lot of understanding to know what to actually do in different social situations, how to respond and how to speak and all that. But you don't have much chance if you've forgotten yourself. So there is something about starting here, being connected to oneself and staying connected. So you it might be that it's very, very helpful for you to train yourself more to stay connected to your body, stay connected to your mind, your heart, your feelings, and know what they're kind of, have this kind of self-possession or self-awareness that you carry with you into situations, and to study when you lose that, what causes you to lose that. And it might be very interesting to notice what the cause and conditions are for losing your self-awareness. It could be that you lose it when you get nervous, you know, it could be you lose it when you feel like you want to be liked by people, and so you're trying to kind of make everything nice. You could lose it when you get excited and really happy in some way. It could be you lose it when you're, you know, there's all kinds of reasons why you might lose it. And then you look at that and understand that, and then really question, is it really worth losing it for this thing, for this cause? So it might be that for the next 3 months, you just study that. What is it that causes you to lose your awareness when you're in social relationships? And if you don't lose your awareness, you probably will have a lot more information to operate under. And you'll have a lot of understanding about yourself. And the cues inside of you in response to things around you are really important to understand. When you feel contracted, tight, when you feel tired, weary, when you feel oppressed, there's all these emotions that come along. There are all kinds of thoughts and ideas that come along that are important pieces of evidence for the understanding the puzzle. If you don't have those puzzle pieces, you can't make a good puzzle. And your piece of the, your really important contribution to the puzzle. The other pieces of the puzzle, how to go involve a social relationship, has a lot to do with things that you can't know necessarily because they involve other people. And sometimes you can intuit or sense what's going on with other people and kind of understand what's needed. But it's very respectful not to know also, you know, not to assume and guess. And so a very important part of communication is, and working with people, is to have good communication skills. And so be able to talk and say, so if you had all those wonderful questions you had about how far you go and what to do and what do you do when there's many different demands or different interests of different people, it's hard to figure out, but you don't have to be the only one who figures it out privately. You can say, you know, I'm wondering here. I'm wondering, you know, is this appropriate right now? Or, you know, I'm wondering, am I giving too much or too little? Or I'm wondering if this is kind of how it is for you. You seem to have different expectations than me. You operate differently. It's wonderful you are the way you are, but, you know, we're different here, and I'm wondering how we kind of sort our way here through all this. So to develop and communication skills is really, really important. And for some people, a lot of people, maybe everyone, It's really good to get some, to actually do it, get trained in communication, in good communication. There's all kinds of trainings you can do. You learn what to pay attention to, how to speak, get wise on it. And that's one of the things I think is happening this weekend, this workshop this weekend on inner and outer conflict, outer conflict with other people. So a lot of the things you're concerned with are going to come out there in this workshop. So that's my thoughts so far in response to what you said. That's back to you.
One more thing is, we talked a lot about also the needs of ours, and often I find myself like being far more wanting to give and responding to the needs of others. And I realized that sometimes, as you said, and most of the time, if I don't ask the question, if I don't communicate and I assume their needs, I might be totally wrong. It's my own perception, and I realize more often than not now, I really have to say, is it important to you? Because instead of trying to assume what is important to them and try to change my behavior towards them to,
beautiful. You know,
to make them happy.
Beautiful. So. Sounds to me like you're in a good track.
I was wondering if you would actually ask us a question, because I was here like a few months ago and you asked us a question, and I found it really helpful. The question you asked then was, when is the phrase helpful? You don't have to do anything, or you need not have to do anything. And it was a very helpful night, so I was hoping that you would ask us a question.
Well, coming here this evening, I thought of asking you a question. I thought maybe at the end of the meditation I had something that I wanted to do. So I'll tell you what I didn't do. And you can see, maybe there's something that comes for you. And that was last week I was here, I talked about the value of intention, just connecting, finding one's deepest intention. And I thought today of evoking that again during the end of the meditation. Well, you know, what's your intention? What's your deepest intention for your life? And then once hopefully you found something, I would have guided you a little bit, so the people for whom that language maybe doesn't work, I would have offered some little different angle. And then I was going to ask you to come up and say, what is the most important question that you might have about that intention, about living that intention or fulfilling that intention? What question comes out of that intention, something you really want to know? So?
Could you repeat the question, please? Yeah, I'm supposed to say what's the most important question?
Yeah. So, once you know what your deepest intention is for your life, what can you think of as the most significant question you have in relationship to that intention? For example, someone's deepest intention might be, I don't know what it might be, but their question out of it might be, is it okay to have that intention? I mean, this is kind of big, or, you know, can I live up to this kind of intention? Am I good enough for this? Or it could be, you know, it could be something more detailed. It could be, where do I get trained to do that? Or how long is it going to take? Or who's going to help me? Or I don't know. Yeah, it could be all kinds of things, you know, anything.
The first thing that comes into my mind is how do I... there are moments where I see my oneness with everyone. There's no differences. And there are moments where that is not the case. And I become aware of it, and I recognize that I came in to play again. And I guess I'm wondering, you know, when, I guess I just keep practicing until that just disappears, or am I like attaching myself to the vision that it will disappear? So it sometimes that tends to roll around in my head, but then I try not to focus on it too much because then I feel like I'm caught in self. But I love when I am aware and in the moment and I don't see separateness with other or with people or with nature. And I know I have really awakened to that by coming here. And so I'm wondering if there's when does it happen that that's just continuous, because I found myself as I continue to practice that those moments tend to get larger and larger in between.
Cool. Great, that's lovely. Thank you. You weren't expecting an answer, right? That's a great question. So here, please. Debbie has.
My question is about judgment, and specifically in the context of coming back from a retreat. I went to my first retreat in December at Spirit Rock, and when I came back, I was very positive and happy, but found myself judging others' lifestyles who I felt like they could adapt to be happier, feel the way I was feeling, and B, felt others judging my happiness out of their own insecurity or fear, not knowing how to respond to me. So I was wondering if you could speak to that, please.
What's the issue? I mean, this is what people do. You judge, people judge you, but that's what, it's like one of the main currencies going on. So it's what people do, so what's the issue?
I don't know, what is the issue? I guess I found myself just reacting as opposed to keeping with the practice and responding.
So what does reacting mean for you? Can you give some meat to that statement?
Getting upset at myself for judging or putting back up the defensive barriers to others when I found them judging my own actions.
And
retreating away from the openness that I felt after the retreat.
So the problem wasn't particularly the judgments per se, but rather the reaction you had around the judgments, judgments of others, judgments you had.
Right.
So I wonder if it'd be useful for you to look at that reactions. And what would it be like to just to allow judgment to happen without any judging of the judgments? Would that be possible? Would that be useful? Would that be healthy? Would it help actually create more clarity and more harmony in the situation? So, for example, people judging you, I mean, until the day you die, I think people are going to be judging you. That's kind of like, and so if you're trying to avoid judgments, and try to protect yourself from it, you're going to be exhausted. But how do we work with people judging you? I love the little poem by the saying by the Buddha. They blame you if you talk too much. They blame you if you talk too little. They blame you if you talk just in between. No one in this world is free of blame or criticism. It gives you a lot of power or a lot of strength in the world to not to be pushed around by what other people think of you. It's important, I think there's a very important place to be taken into account what other people think, and especially people who you respect. You don't want to just blow everybody off, but you don't want to be pushed around and get caught up and contracted. And probably a lot of it has to do with your sense of self. And so to look at that, the detachment to self-you, self-identity, what's going on there. And so eventually, hopefully, you become lighter and lighter about people judging you. So, that's interesting. Or that's not interesting today. And this is the way it is. And then so that's, other people doing it towards you, and then you towards other people. If you react to it, tighten up around it and suffer because of it, then you're not going to be able to learn from it. And your judging of other people is something I think very important to understand and to learn from, because it's just really a surface symptom of something deeper. Some judgments we have are a symptom of wisdom. You know, it's part of being a human being is to be able to evaluate situations, evaluate people, what's going on, and to be able to distinguish between evaluation and judgment. We use the word judgment in English, where you're arbitrary deciding whether what someone's doing or saying is good or bad. Evaluating can have different criteria. Evaluating whether is that useful or not useful. Does that require a response or not a response? And so I think it's very important to be able to evaluate. And you know, we're not supposed to, because we're meditators, we're not supposed to kind of, you know, have blank minds that goes through the world without evaluating anything. So it might be wisdom operating, and by not reacting to it and contracting around it, you might be able to find that there's actually some deeper wisdom that's operating within you when you're looking and seeing. On the other hand, there are times when we're judgmental of people, critical of them, and it's a symptom of something, but it's a symptom of something, not wisdom, but something else that needs our attention deep inside. We might feel hurt, we might feel insecure, we might be trying to protect ourselves. One of the classic reasons why people are judgmental, judging other people, it's a way of protecting themselves. And so the more we judge, the more we kind of like, you know, don't have to look at ourselves, we're protected. And so what's that self-protection about? And to go in and see, what am I trying to protect? What's happening? What's underneath that is important. Sometimes people judge other people, maybe not to protect ourselves so much, but in order to build ourselves up. You know, look, I'm better than them because I can judge them. And so it's important then to look. And some judgments are connected to very strong emotions. There can be judgments that have a lot of hate in them. There can be judgments that have a lot of greed and desire in them. And so it might be, I think it's much more, very, very important to be able to then drop into the ill will or the desire that's there and really get to the bottom of it and really purify it or cleanse it, clean it in some way. And so I think our judgments, the art we make, that you make, you should have a lot of respect for it. And respect doesn't mean you believe them. But respect means you're really willing to look at it more carefully, respectfully, and kind of begin to kind of see that it's connected to some really deep part of, full deep part of who you are. So for the time being, I think you've got to start with looking at your judgments of your judgments. And once you've got to get that out of the way a little bit, then you can get into the deep, something much more interesting. So judge away. Does that make sense to you?
I'm struggling with something. It's very difficult for me. I'm trying to figure out how to have empathy for another person's pain and suffering without merging with them and taking on their pain and suffering as my own. And I just moved down here and started a new job at the hospital, and I'm working with people that have had some pretty severe trauma, and it's hard for me to do an effective job at work when I'm taking on their pain as my own pain. I'm wondering if you can help me with that in any way.
Well, I think having a meditation practice is really helpful. Having other ways in which you, when you go home and before you go to work, that you have someone you share it with and talk about your struggle. So it's not just something on your own. Meditation is a way of processing what goes on so it doesn't build up. There's more self-understanding. And to think of meditation not only as a way of processing what the trauma is for you, but it's also a way of developing greater self-understanding for you of what happens when you walk into someone's room and with them. And you need to really study that carefully. And you might actually find some times where you, when you walk down the hallway to someone's room, and then don't go in. Turn around and go find some place quiet for even just the bathroom. You know, you say, I have to go to the bathroom. You know, you don't have to tell them why. You have to go. And then go someplace quiet and just notice what's going on inside of you even before you go into the room. And then also, if you can, it's really good to pick up small weights before you pick up big weights when you're at the gym. So can you go into rooms or with people where it's not so challenging for you, but just a little bit of challenging, so you can really study what goes on with you. And then later, find someone you can debrief with, so you can because you really need to explore, like spend time. There's a big territory you're in. It's not an easy thing. And you have to give yourself months to really start to explore, develop the territory that you're involved in. Journal, talk to friends, meditate, whatever you can, thinking that it's a big project. If you're looking for a key that's going to solve this today, it's not going to happen. And while you do this big many-month project, find some way to discharge, whether it's go running or, you know, whatever it might be. Don't use television. And do something that is so. Those are things I think of in the beginning. How does that sound to you?
That sounds good. Yeah.
Do you have any more you want to ask or say about it, or?
All right, now.
Okay. Thank you. So, yes.
I was especially appreciative and grateful for last Monday's talk on intentions. And you invited us to write down our intentions. And I took that advice to heart. And that night, Monday, and for the next 5 nights and mornings, I wrote down my intentions. And with each journaling, the list of intentions got longer and longer. It's interesting that there was a question here, and you asked a question of us, and that question is, what was it? What's the most important question you have about that intention? And I, on the third morning when I was writing down the list of intentions, there was one particular intention that triggered a question, and that was, is this selfish? And when I look back on the list that I've made, that particular intention is the top three intentions. And then further down on the list, there was one intention, and the question that I had for that particular intention is, can that be an intention? So what I'm asking you to elaborate further is to take us a step further. I had questions about the intentions. And what do I do with the, how do I answer the questions about the intentions now that I have them? And I didn't know that I was supposed to do that, to have questions about the intentions.
I think that, the practice of exploring intentions, deepest intentions or intentions, is one that's an ongoing exploration. And so the ongoing exploration is one that you keep asking questions about it. There's a lot of questions you could ask. And it's the best that I don't give you a series of questions, but you kind of just come up with yourself as you explore them. But I think having questions is a really useful way of practicing and living. And then some of these questions you don't want to answer too quickly. It's like you want to live with a question. It's like you want to kind of like digest or savor a question and see all the things that arise when the question is stated. Like the question, is this selfish? That's a great question. Don't settle for the easy answers. And just kind of keep asking, you know, over a week, you know, is this selfish? You know, how might this be selfish? How might not be selfish? What are the selfish aspects of it? You know, what comes up when you think, is this selfish? There might be a lot of baggage that you carry with you when you ask that question. It could be cultural, it could be familial, it could be personal. There could be a lot of wisdom that's connected to that question. What does it mean to be selfless? And what's the relationship to being selfless and being selfish? And when is it appropriate to be self-focused without being, you know, how can we be self-focused without being selfish? So asking these questions and living with them and for a long time, for a while, is really a good thing to do. So the fact that you would come up with questions based on those exploration of intentions is great, and it's might be more important than you have the, more important to have the questions than it is to have the answers.
When you talked about intention, you asked us to think in one sentence, and I remember I really struggled with that because I came up with something, but it felt like it was shrinking the desire that I had inside, and that's it's not quite as crystal clear. It was it's kind of fuzzy,
yes.
It's very intense.
Yes.
And I found myself that I was fighting the, you know, but just coming up with one sentence.
Oh, you, yeah, that, but I can well imagine that. And if you're fighting some suggestion I have made, you've gone on the wrong track. Now, why, you know, that's, that becomes interesting. Why struggle? Why the fight?
Well, the other question I had is when you formulate an intention, does it have to be in words? I mean, could it be a feeling, or could it be an image?
Yes, yes, it could definitely be an image. And it it could be a direction rather than an intention. And it, I think, you know, it's to, there are times, I think, when many people have some really deep direction, value, something, some activity that they're really important from they're doing, and they can't articulate a reason for it. They just know, this is what's really clear and what they have to do. And so I know this well, and so I know from personal experience that it's not always possible to articulate an intention. And so maybe I should have done a better job last week making that clear and offered other options.
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about practicing compassion when you're having to, with a child, having to discipline, and you know this is going to make them really unhappy, and keeping one's compassion but still remaining really firm.
Gil doesn't know anything about
that. You're asking someone who spent the whole day with two kids. How to have compassion for kids.
With limits.
How to have compassion? I think that with limits is extra. The issue is how to have compassion, and how to stay connected to that compassion. And then we'd have to if they have to set limits, then that's a whole other issue. But the issue is how to maintain the compassion. And I think that, there's a lot of things that come to mind, but one of the, what comes to mind first here is to understand what a huge, huge impact an adult can have on a child's life. And it's such a huge, it can set the course of someone's lifetime. And you never know which one, what impact's going to have. And so, if you understand how consequential it is, how you relate to, how you act to children, I think it's a lot easier, I think it's easier for me to have compassion. It also helps me to see how amazingly vulnerable children can be. How they take things in really deeply. They don't have sometimes their kind of boundaries, and to use a popular word, they don't have the kind of protection, protecting them, or the armor, or all kinds of things. And so things can go in really deep and very quickly. And just to have a sense of that, to see that, elicits compassion or care or concern. It helps, of course. I think healthy compassion for children helps if you don't get caught up in their drama. And you know, there was too many times that I care to mention today where I had to decide whether to allow or intervene with rather loud sibling behavior. Where is it? Is this play, or is this World War III? And how do I decide? And how do I know? You know, and you know when you know when do I just you know this is ridiculous this the way they're fighting, and when do I just leave it alone, and you know when do I get involved? You know. So a certain amount of suffering in these kids, you have to just let them suffer. And it's compassionate, just leave them alone. You know, if I'm going to get involved in every possible little, you know, way in which they conventionally look like they're suffering, I'm going to raise terrible kids. You know, always fixing them and taking care of things. So you leave them alone, you know, to suffer.
Throw away the key.
Well, don't throw. No, never throw away the key. So I say that not to be cruel, but it's a healthy part of the compassion to understand that they have to also go through their own hard knocks and learning and struggles and see the consequences and all that. And it's not an easy equation sometimes. And you know, to do that, then at least once today, I was a casualty in that. We were parking downtown Redwood City, and I was paying for the parking meter. I don't know if I had to, but the sign didn't say. Usually it says no holidays, right? So, but it didn't say no holidays. It said Monday through Saturday you have to pay. So I thought, okay, I'll pay. And so I was using my credit card. It was raining. And they were at it. But they were just at it, you know, it wasn't that bad, but they were doing this thing. But it was happening. I was like this far, you know, like a foot away from the meter machine, putting my credit card, trying to make it understand how to work these buttons and everything. And they were at it with each other, between me and the machine. Now, of course, what I should have said was, "Excuse me," but you know, it's raining and I can't really figure out this thing here. You know, would you mind stepping aside? And it didn't come out quite that way. So I was the casualty. So good luck. I know, I need it. But it's a great question, you know, the question of how do we keep compassion for kids? And I keep that question, that concern in the forefront, exploring it and questioning it. And I think the other half of the question will just kind of take care of itself, hopefully. Okay, so I hope that was okay for you to do questions like this. And I appreciate it very much, hearing from you. So, good night.